Welcome to Comics.
Episode 260. This week, we talk about
Star Wars, Darth Vader, Vader.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes. See what we're reading next. Send us a message. Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast.
So do we have witty banter this week?
I really have nothing. I got nothing. I'm cleaning for Thanksgiving. I don't know. I don't think anybody else does something like this, but I really do like my Thanksgiving. So like every May or June, I have Thanksgiving in May or Thanksgiving in June. Because every year, like Thanksgiving is one of my favorite holidays, and every year I do Thanksgiving with my family, and I love it, and I love the opportunity to speak with your family openly and honestly and tell them how much you appreciate them. Just having a day to let people know that you appreciate them is awesome. But like, that's always with my family. And mm-hmm. I never get to say that with like my wife's family or my friends and that kind of thing. So I do it in May and June. The only problem is it's really fucking hard to find a turkey in the middle of June.
I believe that.
Like, I'm calling Safeways, asking to talk to their meat department, calling like Whole Foods. It's tough. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to find one. I might just, like, then get a whole bunch of drumsticks and thighs and throw them in the oven.
Hey, that works. I mean, you can buy, like, a turkey breast if you, like, you can assemble a turkey from the parts if necessary.
I can Voltron a turkey.
Yes, exactly.
Well, and then I can get more drumsticks in there, too. Everybody always wants a drumstick. But
yeah. Well, there you go.
There's only two on the turkey. But yeah, there's a local place called Harry's Hofbräu, and they will do a full turkey dinner for you whenever, any time of the year, as long as you give them 2 days' notice, because they have to brine the turkey and everything.
Oh, nice.
But for, like, stuffing, mashed potatoes and gravy, and the turkey is $150.
On the other hand, how many people do you have going?
I don't know. It's hard to gauge, because I have families coming where only one person has RSVP'd, and I'm like, that's one RSVP, but it's six people.
Ah, yeah. I mean, so if it's 150 to feed, like, a lot of people, that's probably, well, it never evens out to cooking it yourself, but it's not insane.
And there, it's a potluck, too, so other people are bringing food, so I'm not solely responsible for feeding everyone. And my wife is always super concerned, like, oh, but what if there's not enough food for everyone? And my response is always, that means somebody didn't bring enough to the goddamn potluck and they deserve to starve.
Like, you gotta, like, find them and single them out. Like you don't get more.
Like, I made a fucking turkey, okay? I cooked that shit for, like, 6 hours in my oven. Y'all can go to Safeway and grab something from the deli department before you come here. It ain't that hard. I mean, yeah. I would prefer home cooked, but, like, I understand. It sucks sometimes to cook, and sometimes there's the party coming, and you forget, and then, oh, shit, I gotta go to Safeway and get deli crap. But, like, well, that's fine.
Some people can't cook. Like, sometimes you're better off with the deli stuff.
So, and that's cool, too. That's cool, too, you know? But, yeah, I'm always like, Thunderdome when it comes to potlucks. It's your own goddamn fault. Yeah.
That's fair. You know, that's a lovely tradition. Maybe one year I will finally be able to make it. I've known you for how long?
No, and it's fine. Like, that's the other thing, too. I feel like people, for the first couple of years, people were super apologetic when they couldn't make it. Like, oh my god, I'm so sorry. This sounds so great, and I wish I could go, blah, blah, blah. But really, like, it's something where I have to set a specific date, and I can't move it around. I can't, like, tool around with it at all. I have to set a date and say this is when it's going to... So, I mean, like... And people have lives, you know? It's fine. If you got shit to do, you got shit to do, and it happens year over year. Although, I did learn my lesson to not put it the same weekend as Fanime anymore.
Ah, that
I used to do that all the time.
Important.
Yeah. I can't compete with Fanime. Just couldn't do it. Well, when I was downtown, there was one year it worked out, because people went to Fanime and then walked to my apartment.
Ah. Not so. But yeah, you need, like, them sweet mangas. You can't give that up for turkey.
Yeah, well, and then this year, there's a chance it might be the same night as the Stanley Cup final game.
Oh. Well, that's easy. Just put the game on.
Yeah, there you go. I have a 120-inch screen. I'm pretty sure it's going to be better watching it at my place than anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, shall we talk about Vader Vader?
Vader Vader, yes.
This week's comic.
This week, we read Best of Marvel Comics 2015. That's our arc. We read Star Wars, Darth Vader, Vader! So weird. So the title is Star Wars Darth Vader because it's an ongoing comic that's focused on Darth Vader and his experiences in the time between the end of episode 4 and the beginning of episode 5 of the films. And the first trade is called Vader with an exclamation mark. So it's Darth Vader, Vader! That collects the first 6 issues of Star Wars Darth Vader written by Kyron Gillen with art by Salvador La Roca. And I have to say, this book kind of reeled me in from the first page when it had that Star Wars-style scroll kind of giving you the lowdown of this is the time frame we're talking about. But what I appreciated more was that the perspective it gave. Like, that scroll is always from the perspective of the Rebels. And this one talks about, like, the devastating destruction of the peacekeeping weapon, the Death Star. Is preventing the righteous reign of the Empire from succeeding.
There will be chaos.
Yeah, like, I really appreciated this perspective because that lays out for you immediately Darth Vader's perspective. That, like, the Empire is in a place of righteousness here, and that they are bringing order to an otherwise chaotic galaxy, which falls right in line with Anakin's experience. He always hated the Senate. He always hated how there was constant argument over everything, and there just needed to be one person that said how things were supposed to be, which is why he's all down with the Emperor, and why he believes that this is the way to an ordered, more peaceful universe. And I love that it's laid out for you right there at the start. And so it just, like, it immediately puts you in his perspective and lets him be a sympathetic protagonist, even though he's super fucking evil.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. So the original trilogy is absolutely a hero's journey. I mean, it's like archetypal for that. But that means that Vader and Palpatine and the Empire in general are set up as being like just generally super evil. So the problem with that is that it's hard to have a nuanced viewpoint about any of these characters. And that's what's so nice about, like, the expanded universe. You get the point of view, like, maybe the Empire isn't just a bunch of terrible people trying to, you know, take over the galaxy in an evil dictatorship. They are trying to impose law where a Senate has previously failed. You know, like, they're trying to unify a body of planets. It makes a lot more sense if you actually just take the time to look at it from their perspective.
And even within their ranks, there's a tension on how to do it correctly. But it's interesting because they're fighting over how to bring order to the galaxy. Like, I love the argument between Darth Vader and Grand General Taggy? Tag? I don't know. We'll say Tag.
Tag? Yeah.
Yeah, Grand General Tag. So, like, Vader wants it to be about faith and the Force and letting the Force guide the principles and the future and the order that they're trying to bring to the galaxy. So he's all about, you know, vision through the Force. That's Darth Vader. But Tag is like, no, motherfucker, the Force is like this fluid shit. I don't know what's going on there. I have graphs. I have charts.
I love him.
I have an Excel spreadsheet about this colony, bro.
But, you know, he's right. It doesn't make sense to bank the fortune of your empire on one weapon or one person. And it's interesting because this kind of does frame Darth Vader as a religious zealot in some ways. The way he looks at, you know, the cyborgs and says they're abominations. He says the Force is the way to control things. But, you know, when you're like the last Sith, like, no one is gonna look at you and understand what that means or understand why you're powerful or why you matter.
Yeah. And I appreciated the Emperor even giving Vader perspective on that. Like, you're calling them abominations. Like, look in the mirror, bro.
Yeah.
Like, you exist today because I do these kind of abominations. And I love the way that the Emperor can be completely ruthless and still be trying to help Vader. Like, the Emperor, I don't know. I like the portrayal of that character in here too, because he's also a dynamic character here, and that he can be that completely ruthless. Like, yeah, 20 years ago, before I even put you in this suit, when you failed me on Mustafar, I started pursuing a different way of going about things because you had failed me then, and I thought, and I was planning on you failing me again, and here we are. You failed me again, and you've proven that this 20 years of experiments brought me here. You know, so he can be that kind of ruthless, but he can also be like, you know, and this religion that I have brought you into, this Sith religion that I have brought you into, that you are such a zealot of, the way of this religion is strength. And if you are destined to be my apprentice, you will defeat these people. And in defeating them, you will prove that your way is righteous. And I am happy to keep you as my apprentice if you prove your strength. So he can be completely ruthless and also reinforce the zealotry that Vader is all about. I love that he can do both at the same time for him.
Yeah, and I think that is, like, a good portrayal of the Sith way. Like, you plan for the future, and you're ruthless, but at the same time, you know, the tenets of strength and being able to overpower your enemy makes you right. So.
Yeah, and that's something Vader gives us in the first issue. When Vader goes to Jabba, and Jabba's like, the Jedi mind tricks don't work on me. And Vader's like, Sith don't do that, bro. I don't need to mind trick you. Either you get scared by my intimidation into doing what I want you to do, or I kill you and find someone who will do what I want them to do. Like, I don't need to mind trick you. I'm strong enough to not have to do that. So Vader is even embodying the thing that he hates about the Emperor, and it's like, that's what I love about the character of Vader, is the cycle of self-loathing that he doesn't even see. Like, that is the driving force of his hatred so much of the time.
Yeah, he is actually a really rich and complex character. It's just very, well, absolutely in the movies. I think it's in the original series shown, or like, in glimpses, because Luke is the main character.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in the prequels, it's not shown well.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. In the movies, you get just Anakin or just Vader, right? Mm-hmm. And neither one of those characters on their own are really dynamic. They're both not cardboard characters. They're not two-dimensional. I mean, they're more fleshed out than that. They have their motives and their drives, and they change and they grow and all that kind of great stuff. But Vader is just, he's in the original trilogy, he's just a monster, like an intimidating vehicle of force, you know? Not like the Force, but just a blunt object, like everybody calls him. There's a person under that mask, though, when you watch those movies, and that means that there must have been a time before the mask when he was human, except Anakin is also super fucking boring. Because it's wooden acting, and it's zealotry, and you know the path he's going to take. But what's interesting, and what makes the EU such a huge draw for Star Wars nerds, is that all these characters that are embodiments of good or evil in these trilogies and prequels and everything, like, that's what makes the movies great, is the black and white, the good and evil facing off and battling, and the hero's journey against the darkness. Like, all that kind of stuff makes the movies good, but what makes the EU good is showing those gray areas, not the gray areas, but how one gets to the other. That's what the prequels were trying to do, but ultimately failed.
Yeah, and the problem there is, like, if you look at just Anakin, he's someone who's, like, really angry, but whose actions still don't make a whole lot of sense. Because he's supposed to be smart, and I say that with, like, air quotes, even though you can't see.
S-M-R-T.
Yep. Exactly. And then, as you said, Darth Vader is just, like, he's a presence. It's like when Luke goes into the cave when he's training with Yoda and he sees, you know, Vader there. It's just so scary. It's this insurmountable, like, obstacle, a thing that is immutable. But seeing how Vader lapses back into being Anakin, and then if you look forward from Anakin and see how he took the path to being Vader, the relationship there, the bitterness, the sadness, the regrets are really interesting and define an interesting character.
Yeah. Yeah. And then seeing how he resolves them too, right? Like in the last issue, he flashes back to when he was Anakin, except at the end of the issue, he doesn't want that anymore. He doesn't think about like, oh, I have a son. I was wrong. I should go back to the light side. My whole reason for being Sith was wrong. I've seen the light. I'm going to go back and become a Jedi. He doesn't do that. He's like, no, I have a son. I'm going to go find my son. And the Empire will be mine. he realizes he can't go back. He has to move forward. But he doesn't have a way to reconcile it. I have no words for that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just rambling now.
I kind of see where he's coming from, because he suddenly finds this out and he has no way to process this information, right? Because he thought this kid was dead, and he's like, what the fuck?
And his wife died with her kids in her,
yeah. Yeah, and more than that, like, if you think about it, he slowly comes to this realization, but where it first strikes him, he's like in a fucking trench in the Death Star, you know, like getting shot at and shooting others. Like, it's not like the time or place for sitting down and reflecting upon one's life. So, you know, he's had a busy few weeks, so he hasn't had time to process.
Yeah, he's had some shit to do.
Yeah. His job's been keeping him really occupied, so. But, yeah, and I really did like the scene at the end where he realizes that Palpatine has lied to him, and he just, like, clenches his fist, and the glass, like, cracks, and then it just breaks. I think that was well done, because that's the thing about Vader. His anger as Darth Vader, not as Anakin, is really subtle and repressed, and then it, like, explodes outwards. But, like, I feel like we're at the point where he's on the brink and hasn't, like, exploded yet. Because, and there's another scene, it flashes back, where I think someone asks him what he's been doing on Tatooine, and it shows this little flashback where it's like, the day before yesterday, he murdered a village of sand people.
I know. And I just get this feeling like every time he goes back to Tatooine or has to go there, he just murders a village of Tusken Raiders. Like, it's just what he does when he goes home.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't you?
I mean, it's like...
It's the greatest vacationing appeal of Tatooine. Just murder some people.
Just murder the indigenous tribes people.
In cold blood. Whatever. Yeah. But it's kind of interesting because he's a very cold character, and then you see these like outbursts of crazed passion. And, you know, if you know his background at all, not just reading this comic, you know it's because he lost his mother. And obviously it's not the same people who killed his mom, but he's like, he hasn't processed that, because again, he's been really busy with work.
Been really busy in the office.
This is like, yeah, this is my new excuse for Vader. He's just been really busy. He hasn't had time to like emotionally process.
I mean,
it's
true. He's the second in command of an empire that spans the entire fucking galaxy. Got some shit to do. Well, not the entire galaxy. It's hot space and all that. But okay, you brought up that last panel or that last full page where he's shattering the glass. That is my favorite page. Because that is a beautiful artistic metaphor. Because he's looking through the glass out on the fleet, the fleet of Star Destroyers. And that fleet represents the Empire as he believed it existed, like the strength and the might of the order that can be brought by the Empire. And he's viewing it through the lens of this glass that was clear. He saw the Empire clearly. He knew that he had a place and a forward way to go. And then after the realization of his son, that glass becomes shattered and his view of the Empire is completely broken and disjointed. And I love the metaphor of him looking through this glass at what he thought the universe was. and how it's changed and broken completely by the news that he has a son. I love that page.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the reflection of himself also that starts to crack. And it really is Luke and in Luke's continuing survival that not only force Vader to show compassion to others, I mean, he ends up helping Luke against the Emperor. It's that he eventually shows some degree of compassion toward himself. Because I think something that was not conveyed well in the prequels, or at least to me, was that...
There were a lot of things in the prequels that weren't conveyed well.
There's a lot of self-recrimination involved in that. I mean, you're trying... And this is actually like a Jedi problem, right? If you train someone to believe that bad emotion should not be had, that it needs to be ignored or repressed or just never acted on, you end up with some sociopaths who, like, can't control themselves and lash out. But then, you know, Vader, when he kills the first village of sand people, he knows it's wrong. When he kills the children, he knows it's wrong. When Padme dies, he knows he did something bad. And, like, you know, anyone who looks at that would just automatically understand, despite the movie's failings on this. This really bothered me with that movie, where, like, he finds out Padme's dead and falls to his knees and is like, no, but it's just so melodramatic. But, like, it's a very nuanced type of experience for a person to have, where you keep doing these things that you know are bad and they're slowly ruining your life and what you expected and wanted for yourself. That's got to be horrible.
Yeah, and you just can't stop yourself. I mean, it's something that people really can relate to, which is why I think, like you're saying, it's a big miss. Like, just speaking from my personal life, I take on a lot of, like, my wife and I took on debt so she could go to grad school. We took on debt so we can get a new car so she can commute to her job. And I know in the abstract these are things that we quote-unquote need and are good for us in the long run. But right now, today, it feels bad. It feels like I made the, you know, you make these decisions and you go into these choices knowing that the decision is the wrong one to make. And then it's not going to turn out well for you, at least not in the short run. But you can't stop yourself.
Yeah.
Like when you're playing Civ 5 and it's just one more turn and it's 11:30, like, you know, you need to close the fucking game.
But and then just, it's 3 a.m.
Yeah. And you just fucking can't close the goddamn game. You know, it was a bad decision. You can't stop yourself.
And the thing is, every one of, like, Anakin's
I just avoided killing your wife for taking another turn.
Hey, Civ 5 is important business.
It's true,
yeah. The thing with Anakin is all of the terrible actions he takes can actually be viewed... Okay, I don't know about child killing. That's, like, moral event horizon. But gotta everything else... Everything else can be viewed as something that has a moral right to it. So, you know, killing the slavers. Well, you killed a bunch of people, but also they're not going to enslave anyone after that. So you saved lives, you harmed lives. You know, helping the Emperor rise to power against the Senate. Well, the Senate was not a very effective body of government. You maybe tried to help people with that. You know, when he lashes out at Padme, he is trying to keep her, like, out of all of this conflict. But again, he loses control. And that's where, like, the bad stuff happens.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, it's the whole, what is the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the, like, being a Sith doesn't necessarily mean that you are evil. It just means that you embrace your passion and use your emotions as a funnel for the Force. So Vader, I mean, Vader may not see himself as evil. The Sith, like, believe, you know, the ends justify the means, whereas the Jedi are the opposite. You have to always be good. The means don't justify anything. You are good or you are not good. Nothing is justified by anything. You either do a good act or you don't do a good act. And killing children is not a good act. But Vader would say, the Jedi Order and the Senate have created chaos in the galaxy, and they are unable to bring peace and order, so they must be purged. And that means you have to kill every Jedi, regardless of their age. So you gotta go into that school, and you gotta kill all them kids. You know, and he can go into that knowing that what he's doing feels wrong, but is righteous. And I think Vader, all throughout this, believes that he is righteous. And I think it's up until that moment when his son in the second Death Star fighting against him shows him that he is wrong and that the Emperor is wrong. It's that moment when he finally has to admit to himself that he is not righteous. Like,
yeah.
you are killing your son here. There is nothing righteous.
And I think you bring up a good point there. Like, it isn't about good and evil. It's more like the Sith are chaotic and the Jedi are lawful. But chaos and law don't have much to do with good and evil.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I feel like we've talked about a lot of the, like, side implications of this comic, but not the actual comic itself. Which, yeah. I mean, it's a rich universe, obviously.
Yeah.
But, I liked this trade a lot better near the end. The beginning felt a little clunky to me.
Yeah, the whole stuff with Jabba and the bounty hunters and everything.
Yeah, and oddly, it was actually the dialogue writing that threw me off, which mm-hmm. surprised me because Kieran Gillen, like, his writing I have always really loved in everything we've read by him, so I was a little surprised. And Vader, I totally get. He has this very formal mode of speech. I hear it in his voice. It's perfect. But everyone else just kind of had these strange, I don't know, these kind of quirks of syntax where I had to read a lot of what they were saying over and over. Like the guys who were about to get blown up by the, like, drone-operated spaceship that was carrying,
The pirates.
And they are sending out a mayday, and one of them says something along the lines of, they're after our cargo, as they are trying to pop us open, and then, he kind of yells to the general, and then says goodbye, right as he's saying, we're about to die. And I there were other bits of dialogue like that, especially with the archaeologist. Dr. Aphra, but there were just pieces of character-to-character dialogue where the syntax was so strange to me in the situation, or just, it didn't seem like the kind of thing people would say.
Yeah. No, I totally get you. And I think part of it is probably trying to... this is one of the perennial difficulties of this kind of genre, because it's so visual, it's so just like a storyboard for a movie, and this is taking something right out of a movie. All of these Imperial officers probably are supposed to have British accents.
Yeah.
But how do you put that on the page? You know? And Dr. Aphra, I don't know what her voice is going to be, but in terms of reading her from the page, it took me a while to find her voice in my mind. It takes a while for me to place what her personality is like and how she is that kind of person who, even though she's talking to Darth Vader, will crack a joke when she's not supposed to because she just can't help herself. which might be why Vader takes a liking to her. Because, like we were saying earlier, Vader's the kind of guy who makes bad decisions and can't stop himself. And Dr. Aphra makes bad decisions and can't stop herself. So maybe he sees that in her, or maybe he doesn't see it, and that's part of why they work together well. But it took me quite a while to get that that's what she was doing. Like, talking, making that crack, that joke when she's not supposed to. How she's kind of got that Han Solo vibe, but without any morals.
Yeah.
I guess Han Solo's not supposed to either, but Dr. Aphra clearly is like... what's the line? Like, she's stealing from him. She's the opposite Harrison...
It belongs in an armory.
Right. She's stealing it from a museum and saying, it belongs in an armory. Like, that is straight up Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
I almost said Harrison Jones. I've been playing a lot of Hearthstone back in that Warcraft universe. But yeah, she's very much like that complete no morals Dr. Jones.
Yeah, and it actually took me a really long time to get that. I think it was only in their last interaction with each other where she says, basically, like, this cause is bigger than I am, that I realized she was a patriot. And I was like, this whole thing would have made a lot more sense. And I can see Vader keeping her around if she's a true believer in the Empire. Because, you know, why kill someone who's trying to help you and believes in your cause, even if they are just mildly annoying? But I don't know if the timing of how that idea was conveyed worked, just because I was kind of like, why is he here? Also, the way she kind of bantered and droned on, like, about fixing her droids, I thought she was doing it for him, and then he was like, why did you fix these droids? And I was confused. There was just some timing in maybe the first four issues about how people talked about what they were doing or things that were happening around them where it either didn't seem natural as a thing to say to the other character, mm-hmm. or it wasn't clear to me as the reader.
Yeah, I think Dr. Aphra is she comes up in my mind a lot when we're talking about this kind of thing. And I think she's a character that would have worked great, in a cartoon, on screen, like something on screen, because, like, her life is archaeology, yes, but it's technological archaeology, specifically usually with droids. So she's used to working with robots and machines, and she's probably used to spending a lot of time alone and talking to herself. And just talking to herself and babbling on and interacting with droids who either can't talk back with her or don't give her real conversations. So she's used to having these one-sided conversations. And on the page, like, it's supposed to be her just kind of talking to herself, but Vader's in the room. And she's talking to herself, but he's obviously ignoring her because she's saying it quiet enough or the other side of the room or whatever. And on the page, it doesn't quite come off just right, but it's perfect for her personality that she would do that. I mean, it's perfect for her character that Dr. Aphra would talk to herself in a room even though there's another person, because she's so used to just talking to herself because she does all of this stuff alone. It comes off weird. It's difficult to read. That's true. But once I got a handle of her character, I really liked her. And I liked her robots more. I love her droids.
It actually took me until I saw her saying, like, how loyal she was to the Empire. It was at that point where I was like, ah, I understand what this comic is about. Because I was kind of like, what's Vader doing? Why are we following this slow plot? And then I finally got the sense that, like, this isn't just about him. It's about the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
I really did like her for that. I thought it was weird, though. Like, I really appreciated when she said, I know you're going to kill me, so please do it this way instead of that way.
That was great. Do it with a lightsaber.
So, like, I love that conversation because I think that it's one that is rarely had, but it's true. He probably is going to, and it's very apt of her to notice it. But then it got a little weird how insistent she was about it, like, when it's time, you gotta do it.
Yeah, but also, I appreciate that she's a technology freak, and a lightsaber is something you cannot build unless you are fluent in the Force. It's not something you can build without the Force. And, there's no more Jedi. So if you're really into technology and you want to choose a way to go, like, that is a unique way to go. Almost nobody gets killed by a lightsaber anymore, by choice. Like, I mean, you see Vader killing a ton of people, and you see all this fighting that Vader does. But in reality, it's a tiny percentage of the people that are alive in this universe that actually get killed by lightsabers anymore. So, I can see her thinking it's kind of cool and being insistent that, like, don't be a bitch about it. Kill me with a lightsaber, Vader. Come on, do me that little bit of pleasure.
And I mean, also, it's fast and painless.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah. Which is way better than being spaced.
Yeah. I agree with her there.
Yeah.
What did you think of the droid pair?
Oh my god. Triple favorite zero line. And BT. Favorite line, ha ha ha, you're on fire and also dead.
Yes, the translation.
Oh god, they were, especially 000 reminded me of the droid from Knights of the Old Republic, the first video game.
Oh yeah, that. HK.
HK, yeah, the guy who always called you Meatbag.
Yeah.
I was just like, this has gotta be some sort of homage, because, yeah, it was, I really liked just seeing, like, R2-D2 and 3PO's evil twins, because that's what they were.
Yes. And, I mean, it's, there are other assassin droids. I mean, there's IG-88, but he's designed from the ground up as an assassin droid. There's, Forlom, who is a protocol droid, like, in the vein of C-3PO, but, is a lot like, 000, where he just had a programming twerk and decided he, would rather kill people and be a bounty hunter. And this fleshes out the idea of AI in this universe too, because that's something that's really, that's one of the few things that's not fleshed out in the Star Wars universe, is how artificial intelligence works. Clearly, characters like 000 and 3PO have more agency and autonomy than astromechs for some reason, but the astromechs have more agency and autonomy than the war droids that come out of the Geonosian womb droid factory thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a hierarchy of AI in this universe, but it's never explored why there's this difference and how it works, and that's never gone into. But it seems like the more deadly you are, the less AI you get, as a general rule, but that doesn't stop 000 from torturing a dude to death.
Yeah. I think part of that has got to be part, like, due to the era. Because, I mean, if you think about the original movies, they came out in the 70s, and while that was certainly not the dawn of robotics, it was in the infancy of that as a technology, as an industry. So, you know, if you're trying to stick to the source material as much as possible, and if you're working through, like, the 70s and 80s on extended universe stuff, like, expanded universe stuff, you're going to not be able to predict the actual course of AI and make it seem more realistic or reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I think it's also just kind of the thing where we would think about that today, because we live in a world where people are actively trying to make, you know, thinking artificial intelligence, it's like a big topic, but maybe it just wasn't such a thing that, like, any random reader or viewer would think about and then be like, hey.
That's true, then. Yeah.
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 So, I think it's also a product of its times. Just like fucking Battlestar Galactica and the way, like, wireless versus fixed-line phones work. Like, ugh.
Yeah, that's true.
So, there's something to be said about sci-fi from the 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I really did enjoy the two droids in this. And Aphra grew on me. I liked Tag from the start. Like, he makes Vader use his full title. And
it's Grand General Tag Vader.
Yeah. Well, Excuse me.
And I mean, he should. At that point, he has been promoted over Vader. He's taken Tarkin's job, more or less. And Tarkin as Grand Moff was above Vader. That's why you see Tarkin bossing Vader around. So it's not, I mean, if I'm somebody's boss and they use my title, but they use the wrong title, like, you know, I'm a marketing manager, but if they called me marketing supervisor, I would want to correct them, because that's a different level in the company, you know? And Grand General Tag is just like, excuse me, Vader, I'm sorry, it's Grand General? Could you make sure you get it right next time?
Yeah, and, I mean, he knows their entire, like, military and government structure is based on power and a very enforced ranking system.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, Emperor is at the top, and there's a hierarchy there, and you have to follow it. That's how you get respect, and that's how you get shit done. But, man, I loved him, where he's just like, I got the data. And he's, like, the most freaking reasonable guy I've seen so far in that he understands that maybe a one-pronged solution isn't the best way to, like, you know, win a galaxy. So
yeah, I like the way that he's all in on this Empire thing too. I'm gonna go back to when he said, you know, it's Grand General, like that kind of thing, and the way he treats Vader, it feels ballsy to us as the reader. Like, Vader, I understand what, and he calls Vader a blunt object, you know, your weapon that needs to be wielded, and I'm going to wield you properly, Vader. It feels super ballsy, but at this point, Tag is all in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Either, if he knows, if Vader gets pissed and kills Tag, Vader will suffer the consequences of the Emperor. They are both under the sway of the Emperor. And Tag knows that he is in the Emperor's favor today, and that's fine. And if he falls out of favor, he can fall, but only so far before Vader is brought down to kill Tag from the Emperor. But he, at this point, he's all in. He can boss Vader around because that's the position he's been given by the Emperor. And Vader can be annoyed with it, but Vader cannot be annoyed. He can be annoyed at Tag, and he can be upset at this situation, but the person he's really angry with is the Emperor. And I appreciate that Tag sees all of that hierarchy at the top crystal clear, just like you're saying.
Yeah.
He's operating within it just the way he should, and giving Vader an, what did he call it? Adjunct? No. Giving him a tail, basically.
Yeah.
I love Vader's, like, really shitty way of killing the guy just because he was annoyed with him.
Yeah, oh god, you know, we were talking about, like, the opening scroll text, you know, saying, like, what happened in the previous issue. I like how it's like, and Vader found a spy in the one right after that, and it's like, no, I just watched Vader, like, plant false information as an excuse to kill this guy.
Yeah.
So, stop lying to me. But oh man, I liked that guy. What was his name? Unai or something like that? Yeah, he...
Poor dude.
I felt bad for him. He was just... I totally sympathized where he's like, look, I'm gonna have to report you if you don't let me follow you, so please comply.
And I have my orders. Like, he's also kind of trying to appeal, like, dude, Vader, you know what's gonna happen to me if I don't follow these orders.
Yeah.
If I don't go into your communications log, I am fucked. So please just let me have a little bit of access so they can put something in a goddamn report to this guy.
That guy was in, like, sleepy. That guy was just, like, in the shittiest position, and I sympathized with him for it because, oh man. But, you know, from, to go back a little bit, from the military hierarchy standpoint, I totally understand why Vader doesn't get very much respect and why people look at him and think he's full of superstition and crazed religion, because they have a lot of technology, they have a lot of military force, but they don't have a lot of Sith, by virtue of how Sith work.
Yeah.
And I can see being a general and looking at this Vader guy, like, not even as the apprentice of your ruler, but as the, like, he's almost like the evil Grand Vizier to your Sultan. Of course, in this case, the Sultan is far more evil, but that's not the point. It's more like he is a person with outdated ideas, and you probably don't believe that he has any mystical powers. You think that he's just this guy who's influencing the Emperor and has a position of power for no good reason, and it is slightly outside of the normal structure of things, and of course you'd look at him and say, what a hoax, why should I give this guy respect where I've worked my way up to this position, where I've earned it, I worked in the military. So I can totally see from, like, the position of some random person on any given Star Destroyer why they would ridicule Vader or not give him, like, the respect he's asking for.
Yeah, and I mean, especially Tag. Tag is the perfect foil to Vader because Tag, with his Excel spreadsheets and his graphs and shit, like, he has a fleet of Star Destroyers. You see it in the window. There's like 50 of them there. And that's for one planet. Right? Like, think of how big this universe is supposed to be. There's supposed to be like a billion systems, and each system has 5 or 6 inhabited planets. And the Empire has something like 600 million Star Destroyers. That's a shit ton of Star Destroyers. But that's not even one per planet.
Yeah.
You know? And you think about the vastness of this universe, 600 million Star Destroyers, all the troopers on that, right? If you're the kind of guy that puts all of that in balance, puts all of it on a spreadsheet, and makes sure it's all measured, and wants everything everywhere it needs to be, what the fuck is one person gonna do? Like, Vader, I'm glad you got your lightsaber. That's cool and all, bro. But I have 600 million Star Destroyers. Do you understand the scope of what we're trying to do? And you're just one dude. And that's the antithesis of their philosophies. Like, and Vader, from his religious zealotry, can say, like, yes, I am one person, but one person doing specific acts changes the course of all of this. You know, he's the guy who says, like, it is also about the important person theory of history.
Yeah. On the other hand, from the Sith, if the Sith ideas have managed to propagate through the military where might makes right and strength makes you valuable, well, one guy against, like, an entire army is not actually that strong, even if he has the Force.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of weird because he's outside of the power structure and all, but he's still within it, and he has influence.
Mm-hmm.
Should we talk about the art?
Yeah, we can do the art, and then we'll move on to writing it, because we're going long.
Yeah, well, this happens with Star Wars. It's inevitable.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I thought the art was really good in this. There's a couple times where it's a little bit weird through some of the action scenes. And God, I do not envy Salvador LaRocca. It is real fucking hard to draw the Force.
Yeah.
Like, he's done a decent job, but it's weird. You get this, like, clear bubble when he's closing his fist, and, like, I don't know how you do it, because otherwise you just show a fist, and then you show shattered glass. You need to show that there's the Force in there, which in the show, in the movies, is almost always done through a sound effect. So, sucks to be a comic book artist.
Yeah.
It's like the one thing you can't do reliably.
I think part of that one, as the artist, is that it's good to, when you're working with, like, what is perhaps the biggest franchise in existence, to trust that your readers will understand the context. Because I think if we didn't have anything visually connecting us between the clenched fist and the cracking glass, or the clenched fist and the choking hut, we still could have gotten that this is an effect of the Force because it's expected. So it's not like a far leap in the reader's imagination. That said, I think that the artist, LaRocca here, like, did hand articulation really well. Like, the way he used Vader's hands to show emotion was really good. Because obviously Vader, his face isn't showing. We can't just read his facial expressions and know what he's thinking or feeling. But the way his fingers curl, or he makes a fist, or like he points at someone, it is very evocative. And I think it shows really well exactly what Vader is feeling at any given moment.
That's true.
So, like, that's like a pretty brilliant workaround. Like, mad props for that.
Fist bump. Way to go, Salvador. Yeah, but generally, I really like the art. When they get to the silos, we didn't even talk about Silo and his dudes, but when we get to his station, like, the friggin' space whale with the base on the back of it,
yeah.
like that kind of stuff is not something you see in the Star Wars universe very often. And to make it work is really awesome. Like, the other thing he's having to do is do things in the Star Wars universe that have never been shown in the Star Wars universe before. That kind of thing has never been shown, but still needs to look and feel Star Wars-y. Which is a specific brand of sci-fi, a very specific brand of sci-fi. So, like, all down on you for doing something completely new to this franchise and making it feel like it fits in this franchise. That's also something that's really hard to do and really well done.
Yeah, I mean, like, also, just generally, easily recognizable faces
mm-hmm.
based off of, like, actual people. That's hard to do, I think. And, like, I always immediately knew. Like, the faces were just spot on. So that was really cool.
Yep. All right, let's rate this.
Okay.
I'm going to go first. Part of me wants to give this a 5 because it does such a good job of fleshing out the character of Vader. And we've talked for so long about the implications of character and the universe and all those things that are brought up in this comic. But I'm going to give it a 4 because I'm not sure that they're brought up when we read this because this comic is so good or because it touches on the chords of the things that we like about this franchise. I'm not a good critic because I can't tell you where that line is. If we're talking about these things because they're endemic to the franchise and they're things that are getting brought up in this comic that are in the franchise, or if this comic is bringing a lot of these thoughts and themes to the franchise in a way that is new or different or even just exceptionally well done, even if they're not new for the franchise. I don't know where that line is. Regardless, we are able to talk for like a fucking hour about this comic and all the awesome stuff in it. So even if I can't find that line, it's done a good job of making me talk about this stuff in a way that I was really excited to talk about tonight. So even if I can't give it a 5, I can hella give it a 4.
That's fair. Okay. So, you know, I feel like I gotta give this one a 3. And it's because when I read it, I was like, that was cool. But it also felt very slow, and it felt to me mm-hmm. like not very much happened. I cited some issues I had with, like, the general dialogue and how it was conveyed. But, you know, after talking with you, I my opinion of the comic did go up. And I think it's because I'm not sure this comic necessarily really explores the themes, but it definitely invokes them. Like, mm-hmm. you can't, as someone who has experienced Star Wars and experienced the EU around it, like, look at this comic and not have those things brought into your, like, mental field of view, I guess. Yeah. So, you know, like, the idea of here is our anti-hero protagonist, but, you know, he's not really an anti-hero, he's the bad guy. But also seeing how the Empire functions from within is interesting. I think it's just, you know, it's the first trade, it's a slower start. So maybe it will pick up more. I can't say, because I didn't read more. But this is a tough one, because I think we had, like, an amazing discussion, and it was absolutely spurred on by this comic. Like, totally. But at the same time, just reading it without having someone to talk to about it felt kind of sluggish. That said, I like the ideas in it. I like how they were presented in general. I think that the concept is really cool, and I like the art, so I'm going to give this a 3.
All right. Yeah, and pacing, for all these things that are supposed to flesh out between movies, pacing is always funky. Because there's a set time limit between the movies. Like, there's a known time, right? So all of this stuff that's happening in this comic, that's great, but episode 5 is going to start at some point in this run. And the story that Kieran Gillen wants to tell has to fit within that window. So, like, all of this buildup with Skywalker and everything, you know where that's going. And that's what we're really finding interesting. But that's also what he has to do the slow game. Because as soon as he gets to that payoff and then hits episode 5, this run's over.
Yeah.
You know? So he's got to flesh out everything Vader did in there that we didn't see between episodes 4 and 5. And teasing us along with those breadcrumbs of what we really want to see, but we know won't resolve. We know he doesn't meet his son until episode 5. We know that doesn't happen until that movie. That's the really difficult game with this stuff. And I have a really similar problem with the Rebels cartoon. You know, it's a very, like, known time span that we have here that you're trying to fit this stuff in. And some of it's cool, and some of it's like, okay, there's this Jedi named Kanan that we never hear about. Like, it seems like a serious problem that there are other Jedi still alive. And it alters the way the universe feels, and it has to fit in this time frame, and it has to resolve in a way that doesn't upset the canon of these movies that were made like fucking 50 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough job.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's tough, but it regardless of how easy or difficult it is, it does make the reading wonky, and it does make the pacing wonky, and almost all of this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. That wraps it up for our Best of Marvel for 2015. We're going to go into our third Best of. So we're doing our rest of 2015, which is all of the non-Big Two stuff. Mostly it's graphic novels. We're going to start with the first volume of Descender, which is an Image title, written by Jeff Lemire, who did Underwater Welder, which got one of our best reviews of all time. And we always bring up that comic as something we remember. So I'm really excited to read more Jeff Lemire. This is a cool, like, robot universe kind of thing. So totally different from Underwater Welder. But, you know, also looks really, really cool.
So awesome.
That's what we're going to do next week. It's the first six issues of Descender. After that, we're going to do Democracy, which is a graphic novel by Abraham Kawa. This one, I have no idea what this one is. It's like set in Greece, and it's about democracy in Greece and gods and stuff. And I don't know, but it's supposed to be really cool. So we're going to go with that one. It's a graphic novel. Find that bad boy on Amazon or wherever. After that, we're going to do Black River, which is another graphic novel. Written and drawn by Josh Simmons, and this is a post-apocalyptic kind of thing about a group of people who are trying to find some kind of civilization. But they, you know, whenever you're in post-apocalypse and you have a group of people trying to find civilization that you remember, you come across, you know, the crazy people, the murderous people. Like, it's kind of a Mad Max-y kind of thing, I think. So I'm looking forward to that. And the last thing we're gonna do is the thing I'm looking forward to the most, and it's called Lovable Oaf. This is written and drawn by Ed Luce. And so far as I can tell, it's about an ex-wrestler who has a shitload of cats.
I like the sound of that, honestly.
I don't know what else there is, but it's just a wrestler with a shitload of cats, like, living in San Francisco. I don't know.
I am down with that.
But yeah, it gets good reviews, and the cover looks adorable as fuck. So we're going to do Wovable Oaf. So anyway, next week, first six issues of Descender by Jeff Lemire, then Democracy, then Black River, then Black River, then Wovable Oaf. It's gonna be so hard for me not to say Black River and then Wovable Oaf. It's gonna be so difficult. But yeah, we're gonna do that. And then we had after that another set of four things that we've kind of had backlogged, but I'm gonna backlog those some more. I really want to fit in a four episode tribute to Darwin Cook. Darwin Cook passed away a couple weeks ago as of this recording, and we haven't really read enough Darwin Cook for this show. So we're gonna do some Darwin Cook stuff. I don't know how many episodes it's gonna be. I don't know what we're gonna do yet, but it's gonna be wedged in there. We're definitely gonna do New Frontier and Parker. We might do Batman Ego in there somewhere, and everybody hated Before Watchmen, but Before Watchmen, Minutemen had fantastic art, so we might do that too with Darwin Cook. But if you wanna know, that'll all get figured out, and on our website, go to www.welcometocomics.com. On the left, click on the button that says Future Shows. We have all this shit planned out for, like, the next 12 episodes. So if there's something coming up that you're excited about, that you've read, or that you're thinking about picking up, and it's on our list, buy it on Amazon, buy it wherever you want, and then be ready to listen to the episode right when it comes out. That'll be awesome. So that's the website. WelcomeToComics.com. And of course, always please support the show. Go to patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. Any amount you give is awesome support. Even if it's a penny, it just tells us that you love us. And any amount that you give also gives you access to the monthly bonus episode, which is like stuff we talk about before the show, after the show. It's like our pre-show and after-show banter that just doesn't make the cut. But it's still fun content. So yeah, patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. Get access to those bonus episodes and support the show with your love and your money. But mostly I want your love.
Yeah, love is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.